and to do what he was going to do. Yes, he'd go on with it. That momentary reluctance, that sudden questioning of himself, why? Is it worth it? Why dwell on the past? Why not wipe out the whole thing? All that was only weakness. He was not a boy to be turned this way and that by the whim of the moment. He was a man of 40, assured, purposeful. He would go on with it. He would do what he had come to England to do. He got on the train and passed along the corridor looking for a place. He had waved aside a porter and was carrying his own rawhide suitcase. He looked into carriage after carriage. The train was full. It was only 3 days before Christmas. Stephen Farr looked distastefully at the crowded carriages. People. Incessant, innumerable people. And all so drab-looking. So alike, so horribly alike. Those that hadn't got faces like sheep had faces like rabbits, he thought. Some of them chattered and fussed. Some heavily middle-aged men grunted. More like pigs, those. Even the girls, slender, egg-faced, scarlet-lipped, were of a depressing uniformity. He thought with a sudden longing of open veldt, sun-baked and lonely. And then, suddenly, he caught his breath. Looking into a carriage, this girl was different. Black hair, rich, creamy pallor, eyes with the depth and darkness of night in them. The sad, proud eyes of the South. It was all wrong that this girl should be sitting in this train among these dull, drab-looking people. All wrong that she should be going into the dreary Midlands of England. She should have been on a balcony, a rose between her lips, a piece of black lace draping her proud head, and there should have been dust and heat and the smell of blood, the smell of the bullring in the air. She should be somewhere splendid, not squeezed into the corner of a third-class carriage. He was an observant man. He did not fail to note the shabbiness of her little black coat and skirt, the cheap quality of her fabric gloves, the flimsy shoes, and the defiant note of a flame-red handbag. Nevertheless, splendor was the quality he associated with her. She was splendid, fine, exotic. What the hell was she doing in this country of fogs and chills and hurrying, industrious ants? He thought, I've got to know who she is and what she's doing here. I've got to know. Pilar sat squeezed up against the window and thought how very odd the English smelled. It was what had struck her so far most forcibly about England, the difference of smell. There was no garlic, and no dust, and very little perfume. In this carriage now there was a smell of cold stuffiness, the sulphur smell of the trains, the smell of soap, and another very unpleasant smell. It came, she thought, from the fur collar of the stout woman sitting beside her. Pilar sniffed delicately, imbibing the odour of mothballs reluctantly. It was a funny scent to choose to put on yourself, she thought. A whistle blew, a stentorian voice cried out something, and the train jerked slowly out of the station. They had started. She was on her way. Her heart beat a little faster. Would it be all right? Would she be able to accomplish what she had set out to do? Surely, surely. She had thought it all out so carefully. She was prepared for every eventuality. Oh, yes, she would succeed. She must succeed. The curve of Pilar's red mouth curved upwards. It was suddenly cruel, that mouth, cruel and greedy, like the mouth of a child or a kitten, a mouth that knew only its own desires and that was as yet unaware of pity. She looked round her with the frank curiosity of a child. All these people, 7 of them. How funny they were, the English. They all seemed so rich, so prosperous, their clothes, their boots. Oh, undoubtedly, England was a very rich country, as she had always heard. But they were not at all gay. No, decidedly not gay. That was a handsome man standing in the corridor. Pilar thought he was very handsome. She liked his deeply bronzed face, and his high-bridged nose, and his square shoulders. More quickly than any English girl, Pilar had seen that the man admired her. She had not looked at him once directly, but she knew perfectly how often he had looked at her, and exactly how he had looked. She registered the facts without much interest or emotion. She came from a country where men looked at women as a matter of course, and did not disguise the fact unduly.